Welcome to the Wealthy After Divorce podcast. Jackie Ressler, a divorce financial planner with almost 25 years experience, and myself, Melissa Freidenberg, financial advisor with Pearl Planning. We are both certified divorce financial analysts and your co-hosts.
If you're thinking about divorce or in the process of divorce, this is a time for you to take a deep breath and give yourself permission to gain clarity on the financial decision you're facing.
While the term wealth typically refers to money and possessions, we know that truly being wealthy means a whole lot more. Together with our guests on this podcast, we will help you live wealthy after divorce.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Wealthy After Divorce. Today, this is Jackie Ressler, and I am very excited to be interviewing today Leah Hadley, who is a certified divorce financial analyst in Ohio and the founder of Great Lakes Divorce Financial Solutions. Now, Leah, I am super excited to have her as a guest because she specializes in an area that is of specific interest to many people around the country. She works primarily with women going through the divorce process and really drills down deep into working with stay-at-home moms and their specific financial concerns during a divorce. So welcome, Leah.
Thank you so much for having me, Jackie. I appreciate it.
I'm really excited to have you here. So I know that from other interviews that I've done, a lot of people that get into the field of divorce get into it for a personal reason. So can you share with our audience what brought you to wanting to specialize in this area?
Absolutely. Eventually I did go through my own divorce, but if I back up even before then, I had become a financial advisor and I had taken over an office. I was working for a big broker dealer and taken over an office. And one of the things that I kept seeing is people would go through their divorce and then very quickly after the divorce, just go through their assets. And it was very frustrating to see. And what I noticed very consistently was that it was due to poor planning during the divorce process, that they had, committed to a financial settlement that wasn't really workable long term. And so I noticed that when I was working as a financial advisor, and I started to just learn more about, how can we support people through the divorce process as financial advisors? I started looking into the CDFA designation, the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst designation. I started learning about collaborative divorce and then ultimately ended up going through my own divorce and just really feeling the financial overwhelm that went along with, going through that experience. I had three young children at the time we had bought our house in 2007, right before the market crashed. And so we were completely underwater when we went through our divorce. So we had limited options as far as what we could do with the house. So there was just a lot of financial stress that came along with our separation. And as a result of that, I just really wanted to find a way to support people well through this process, because I truly understand how emotional it is, but also there's so many decisions that have to be made throughout the process as well that don't just impact you today, but for a very long period of time thereafter. And so it's something that I got really excited about and wanted to do. And I tried to do it within a couple of different broker-dealer experiences. And unfortunately, in that, those kinds of companies with all of the compliance restrictions, it was very hard to support people in a way that I wanted to be able to support people. There are just so many limitations. And so that is ultimately why I decided to establish Great Lakes Divorce Financial Solutions, so that way we could really support people in the way that they need help throughout the process.
So, Leah, you mentioned that you had the experience of seeing stay-at-home parents run through their money after the divorce or make decisions that weren't financially viable long-term. Is that because they weren't involved in bill paying during the divorce? Is that why they're more susceptible? Or are there other reasons that they were making bad decisions in your observation?
couple of pieces to that, right? There's the one piece of just like having the stay-at-home parent, but then also not being involved with the finances, right? And you could be one or the other or both.
True.
But especially when somebody does not have any income and they are relying on the other person, the other parent for income. And in particular, if it was a relatively short-term marriage, and so this is happening a lot with young families where, you know, one of the parents is staying home with the kids, but with alimony becoming less and less of an opportunity in many states, and particularly if people were not married for very long, a lot of times, you know, it depends on the state, but a lot of times there isn't even a possibility of alimony or spousal support or spousal maintenance, depending on where you live. You know, that transitional period can be very difficult for somebody who's been out of the workforce and doesn't have that transitional income support that will allow them to transition, you know, a little more gracefully, I guess, into the workforce. Yeah. So that can be really scary. But even if you're in a long-term marriage, if you've been a stay-at-home parent, you know, the entire time your kids are growing up, you're likely in your 50s at this point, that can be really intimidating to be considering re-entering the workforce if there isn't enough income to sustain, you know, more than one household post-divorce. So it is particularly difficult, I think, for stay-at-home parents. And it is one of those things where there is a tremendous amount of fear for a lot of these folks around what does life look like post-divorce? And does that mean I have to give up, you know, especially if they have young children and they really value staying at home and having that time at home? Do I have to sacrifice my values in order to be able to move forward? Like, that can be a really complicated issue for a lot of families.
I agree. And I find that because it's such an overwhelming time for people, they want to, in my experience, they want to grab onto the thing that's the most familiar. So right. If the house is in a community that you have community support, or you your kids are, you know, friends with the next door neighbors. And I think that there's a lot of times I find that stay-at-home moms want to hold on to the house no matter what, without considering that it's may not be feasible to do that.
Right.
And so as a divorce financial planner, when you work with clients, when you come in and that you come in during the stage where they're trying to make up their mind about what they want, How do you help them determine if they can afford to keep the house?
Yeah, this is a great question. And when people do reach out to me, especially when they're considering if they want to get a divorce or not, I always really, really encourage them to take whatever steps they can to see if they can potentially work through whatever challenges they're going through, right? So if there's something going on and they haven't tried couples counseling yet, I always, always really encourage them to take those steps first before we start working toward what does a termination of marriage look like. But assuming that, you know, we're really just looking at the finances and how is this going to work out for them, you know, we look at everything as it relates to the house. So we start with, well, what is the house worth? What's the value of the home? Is there a mortgage on the home? You know, what does that look like? What are the terms? You know, we are in a more complicated market than we've been in a long time for people who are having to refinance their mortgage. A lot of times the interest rate is significantly higher than it was, you know, over the last several years and working in this space. And are a lot of people, they may be giving up some of that equity that they owe to the other person as part of that settlement. And so they may be refinancing, you know, a larger mortgage balance. And so sometimes that is, if you don't have your own income, sometimes that may or may not be possible. You know, is alimony or spousal support and child support going to be enough to support that? You know, that can be a tricky issue. So I always encourage people, if they're looking at that as a possibility, to talk with a lender and make sure that whatever they're negotiating is realistic, is possible. But then it's not just the value of the home and giving up whatever equity and refinancing, but the actual maintenance of the home. And I think this is where people don't necessarily get into the weeds enough in figuring out whether or not they can afford it, right? So a lot of times people will look at, well, this is what we spend now. And they're kind of looking at the utilities or, you know, whatever the ongoing expenses are associated with the home. But if you're not somebody who's taken care of the yard before, and you're going to need to have somebody come in and, you know, take care of the yard. Or, you know, I'm in Cleveland, you're in Michigan, you know, the snow is an issue a lot of years, right? Like, are you going to have to have somebody come in and, you know, handle the snow, right? Is there like maintenance around the house? Who's been handling the plumbing? And, you know, is there, you know, an issue with the roof or windows? Or, you know, it's just, there's a lot of expense associated with maintaining a home that often doesn't get considered. And a lot of times people, when they are negotiating the house, they're trying to hold on to it so tightly that they might be giving up quite a bit of savings or liquid assets that they very well may need in order to be able to maintain the house. So we look at all of that, you know, what is the true cost of staying in the home? But then I also always encourage people to look at least two other scenarios. Even if they are set on, I want to stay in the home and I want to figure out how to make this work, can we just look at two other options so we can truly know, how would your financial life be different if you did one of these other things? And sometimes when we go through that exercise and they realize that, you know what, I can do something different that's going to give me an extra $1,000 a month in cash flow, that's going to be a whole lot more comfortable than staying in this house that's using up all my savings and making it very difficult to pay all the bills every month, right?
I love that. That's a fantastic idea. Do people push back when you suggest that?
Some people do. Some people, their whole focus is, how do I stay in the house? And I get it. Like I said, I had to stay in my house. You know, when I was going through my divorce, we financially could not get out of the house at that time. And I had three young children. So believe me, the thought of packing up all the stuff and all the kids and finding a new place to live, I definitely understand. And like you were saying, Jackie, earlier, it's what's familiar. It's what you know, it's your neighborhood, the schools that your kids have been going to, things like this. But a lot of times when we do go through that exercise and they can see how much more financially secure they would be in an alternative option, it can be really powerful.
Absolutely. So when you present those options to clients, I mean, what I have found in my practice is that somebody that comes to me that says, I absolutely have to keep the house, that's going to be a long-term time that we're going to be working together. So that person, after seeing initial projections that show that they maybe can't afford it, it takes a long time for their brain to connect up with that process. And so for as far as timing goes, when do you like to get involved in a case? What's like the ideal time? So is it, you said you encourage people to go to counseling. Do people call you like the day before they're going to mediation?
Absolutely. It's not ideal. So I always tell people the sooner the better, especially if they're trying to make big financial decisions, because you're exactly right, Jackie. It does take time to process these things to really give them their full consideration. And especially if you are entering into negotiations without having time to process, a lot of times that's just going to make that time frame drag on, right? If you're not ready to be in a position to make those decisions, or you don't even fully understand your options, it just makes that whole process take longer. So the sooner the better, absolutely. But yes, I do encourage people to try what they can and to feel like they've made an attempt, because otherwise, a lot of times what'll happen is people will start down this path and then they'll start to realize that, like, oh, you know, maybe I wish I had done this or tried this. Or so I always encourage people before they're really going toward that termination of marriage that they try to do what they can, you know, whether that's with a marriage counselor or, you know, somebody at their church or whomever. The other thing that I always tell people is, even if you're not working on reconciling the marriage, when you're in those spaces and you're developing those communication skills, they can make the divorce go much smoother because you've had a space to really have somebody help you facilitate that communication, and you're just in a better place to be able to work through these things.
Right. Absolutely. What do you think what are some other concerns that a lot of stay-at-home moms have aside from the house concern?
Yeah, a lot of them, if they have not had their own income for a significant period of time, you know, may also not have retirement assets in their name and may or may not be familiar with the retirement assets that exist within the marriage, right? And so there are a lot of just unknowns for a lot of these folks. And so, unfortunately, that can also be unknown debt as well. There's a lot of surprise debt that comes up in some cases. But it's really getting clear on what is the financial picture. So I was even sitting down with a woman, and she wasn't a stay-at-home parent, but she also wasn't very involved in the finances throughout the marriage just recently. And we just kind of, you know, she's high level thinking about whether or not she wants to move forward with the divorce, but wanted to see what is a realistic financial outcome if she decides to move forward. And we pull out a dry erase board, and we're just kind of like, based on what she knows, general information, kind of illustrating what potentially could happen. And she looks at it and she was like, I've been afraid for no reason. Like, I can do this. I can hear. And it was just, you could see the light bulb, you know, go off. But it, I mean, I think this had been years in the making before we had this conversation. And there was just so much fear around the unknown. But there's a lot that we can do in terms of gathering information, even when, you know, you're not necessarily going through the court or the discovery process, and you're in those early stages of just trying to figure out, well, you know, what does my financial situation look like? You know, there's a lot of puzzle pieces that we can put together to get an idea. It's not going to be exact, but a lot of times it's enough to give somebody the information they need to know realistically what could an outcome be.
Right. I think that moment of like that, when that light bulb goes off for someone, that's the best part for me of working with the client when they, it's, you're right. It's fear of the unknown. It's fear of not, you know, I found with my clients that even just understanding, you know, look, I see that if I keep the house, I'm probably going to have to get rid of it in a couple of years. Knowing that up front gives you so much more power going into negotiations for the final settlement, because you know what the outcome's going to be. You're not dealing with, you know, not only the emotions of the divorce, but that fear of, I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen. And of course, no one has a crystal ball. No one knows exactly what's going to happen, but that educating themselves is so important. Do you find that a lot of stay-at-home parents are prioritizing needs for their children and extracurriculars and all of those kinds of things? How do you, I know that that's handled differently probably in your state than it is in my state. How are extracurriculars handled in a divorce in Ohio?
So they get negotiated in the parenting plan in terms of, you know, who can sign them up and how the cost is going to be shared or not shared. And that is all, you know, something that gets negotiated in the parenting plan here in Ohio. You know, it's a big issue for families on multiple levels. And I always tell people, and this comes up as it relates to, you know, paying for kids' college as well, that these are things that even if you stayed married, you would have to come to some resolution on. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the two of you are going to be on the same page when you start to have these conversations. So there are some families that commit a tremendous amount of money to extracurricular activities, and both parents are fine with that. And there are some families where, you know, one parent is heavily involved in some particular activity, and they are willing to commit a significant amount of money and time to that, and the other parent just isn't on board. But that same conflict can absolutely happen, whether people are married or not. And a lot of times, I think there is kind of a difficult reality check when people realize that if income stays the same and expenses are increases, because now we have to cover the cost of two households, there may be less money available for extracurricular activities. There may be less money available for paying for higher education or private education. And families have to make some difficult decisions sometimes about what is our top priority. And sometimes that does mean that, you know, there is less participation in a particular activity. Sometimes that means I'm going to be in a lower cost residence because I am prioritizing these extracurricular activities for my children.
Right. I think that the key of what I hear you saying is that getting all of the options on the table
and absolutely
considering all the options and not just going in blindly. I do find that to be a big problem with even for my clients that have adult children that they're financially supporting in various ways. And sometimes that has been one of the areas of contention, like you said, in the marriage. It's not going to change when the divorce happens. Things aren't going to get better in that area, communicating about that.
The other big one that comes up in cases is for especially people who have younger children with special needs, and they don't necessarily know how those needs are going to evolve as the child grows up, and what kind of support is going to be needed, and what does that mean from a financial perspective. But again, these are all things that would have to be figured out whether you were married or not. And so, you know, certainly talking about them, but I would say those are the cases where a lot of times a parenting coach or having somebody who has a really solid background and understanding the options can be a wonderful resource.
When you're working with women who have been out of the workforce, obviously they've missed out on, like you said, the retirement buildup in their own name. Do you find that they are often more willing to give up retirement and pension assets because they don't understand how that works for their future?
I would say before we start working together, but that's a big one that we illustrate. And I think that that's a really, really important point, is that a lot of times that is sort of the first thought, is that I don't want to give up the equity in the house. I don't want to have to refinance the mortgage at, you know, a higher balance. Then, you know, are there retirement assets that I can give up in lieu to stay in and retain the equity in the home? And so we really look at not just the short-term implications of decisions. Can you afford the cash flow and the maintenance of the home and all of that? But what does this actually mean for you longer term, particularly for those clients who are in their 50s or, you know, potentially approaching retirement? And what does that mean if you do have to go back to the workforce and start to build a retirement because it's not something that you have as part of your settlement? And getting really clear on what does that mean to you? I mean, for some people, that they're okay with that. And, you know, we have some wonderful career coaches that we work with, so especially if you're re-entering the workforce after being out of it for a significant period of time. That in itself can be very intimidating. And so having a career coach support you through that process can be very valuable. But a lot of times, you know, when people are in their late 50s, they don't want to be starting over saving for retirement at that time. And so making sure that they fully understand. And you brought up the pension too, Jackie. I think there's so much confusion around the pensions, the statements that people receive for the pensions, what is the true value of that pension? And so we do a lot of education with clients around, if they are considering giving up a pension, what does that really mean for, you know, their income in retirement?
That's awesome. I have a client right now, and she is, you know, she's in her her late 40s, and they had a very difficult emotional divorce on many different levels, major changes in the family dynamic as a result of the divorce. But she wasn't thinking that the pension really made any difference. And she, you know, we really made sure throughout the divorce case, when we got to the final settlement, that we took a look at the terms of the agreement for her to make sure that it benefited her, because the idea of getting the pension was so foreign to her, so far in the future that she couldn't connect with it, but that there may be more than one way that it could be worded to allow her to take it before he takes it. But if he dies, and then protecting her, that, and again, that's going to be different in every state, but I know that in Michigan, that is something that has to be addressed in the settlement agreement and is often overlooked and can really hurt those stay-at-home parents or moms that were so focused on the immediate term needs that they didn't want their attorney to consider for them the longer term needs and spend money on that.
Absolutely. And especially for Ohio, there are several state pensions where you really want to have that language locked down in the agreement, because there are multiple ways that somebody can take those pensions. And depending on the language in the agreement, it can lock out the spouse at, you know, certain periods or certain parts of the pension. And so making sure that language really does protect that person is so important. Absolutely.
Right. Again, there's so many pieces that clients need to get education on, and they're not always doing that. Are you typically brought in by the attorney, or do clients find you organically?
It's definitely both. So we have some attorneys that we work with very regularly, especially if there are specific pieces of financial analysis that are needed. But then a lot of clients do reach out to us directly.
Anything that we didn't cover that you feel is important that we need to talk about?
Well, I would just say that, you know, we talked a lot about the fear that is very present in cases where there is a stay-at-home parent. But I will also say that, you know, in doing this work, I've witnessed so many people successfully navigate the process and be so much happier on the other side. Even when there are young children involved, and I'll even speak to my own case where, you know, my ex-husband and I didn't parent well together. We were very unhappy together when we had our children. We're both very happily married to other people now, and we co-parent well together. So it's very possible. Now, with that said, the first year was very difficult. It was very, very hard to get through that transition. And I just tell people that's normal. You know, transitions are difficult. Change is difficult. You have young children, it kind of exacerbates some of those things, but it's doable. And I would not have been able to start my business. I would not be in the position I'm in today if I hadn't gone through that process myself. And I am much happier on the other side. And so, I know that we talked a lot about the fears, but I also just want to say there are so many cases where people work through that, they get through it, and, you know, they really get to choose to what that next chapter looks like for themselves.
Right. That is the best part too, is seeing clients like 1 year after the divorce, they look like completely different people. That stress just weighs on you. And I love that you brought up that you tell clients that it's normal, because I think a lot of people that are going through that process feel like this is what life is going to look like going forward. And they can't see that there's that big light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. Exactly.
So thank you so much, Leah. We're going to put your contact information in the show notes. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, I know that you have a lot of resources. Can you tell us quickly about some of the other resources that you have for divorcing clients?
Absolutely. So we have a free checklist on our website that you can download. It's a big part of where people waste time and money when it comes to divorce is just lack of organization. And so it's really just a framework to help you collect the information that you need to get organized. So that way, when you are interacting with your attorney or with your CDFA, you have what you need and you're not wasting, you know, billable hours on just a lack of organization. We also have a free webinar, Plan for Financial Freedom, 6 things that you can do today to really claim your financial freedom. And you can watch that as well.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much. Hopefully we can have you back another time to talk about other topics, because you are a great resource.
Thank you so much, Jackie. It really has been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Wealthy After Divorce podcast. You can find more information on Melissa Friedenberg and Jackie Ressler on our website, www.pearlplan.com. as well as on our podcast website, www.wealthyafterdivorce.com.